Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
And now here's your guest host, filling in for Mr. Tom Schultz, it's Steve Arviscal. Good morning, sir.
Hey, Cody, thank you very much. Yes, I'm Steve. They've let me come back. They put this microphone in front of me and said, I guess you're doing okay. Not as well as Tom does. He's so masterful in that. I'm thankful that he gives me the opportunity to guest host. Hey, I'm so excited to be with our Voices of Montana audience today, because we have got a fantastic guest who has been on Voices of Montana before. Help me welcome Brian Bird, President and CEO of Northwestern Energy. Welcome, Brian.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Now, Brian, just like you're no stranger to being on Voices of Montana, I want you to spend just a moment sharing a little bit of your background, because I did a little digging on you. It's all good. It's all good. But you have such a wealth of experience in energy and working with Northwestern Energy. Can you give us a 30-second little bit of a resume? I think our listeners should understand where your expertise comes from as you do the work of leading Northwestern Energy. So you're president and CEO now, but you've held other positions.
Yeah, I way back when in 97, I started in the energy industry for a company called NRG. It's a generation company, independent power producer. And over a period of time, I joined Northwestern when it was in bankruptcy. And I like to tell people I'm the CFO that came in when they were in bankruptcy, not the one that put them in bankruptcy. And and that was in 2003. And I thought, to be quite honest, that once I helped them get out of bankruptcy, I have an opportunity to become a CFO finally, and maybe, I don't know if I was a utility guy or not, I might go do something else. And here I am almost 23 years later. I was a CFO for 17 years, the chief operating officer for several, and the CEO here for going on 3 years, I guess.
And that's, I knew a little bit of that because you've had the opportunity to talk with groups that I've been a part of, but I wanted our audience to really understand that. Because not only you, but your whole team at Northwestern Energy, your professionals in that business, that's in part why we can have confidence that when then we flip that switch, the light comes on, is because of the work experience of the team that's helping lead that effort. Well, for our audience, and then Brian, you have this information, we're going to cover a lot today. We're going to talk about some basics about Northwestern Energy. We're going to talk about today's power supply. We'll talk a little bit about our energy future as a state of Montana. And you've been in the news on some things, and Northwestern Energy has. And so we want to talk about that. So I want to dive right into this. Can you give us some basics? What are Northwestern Energy's scope of responsibilities and work for Montana?
Yeah, Steve, we have a service territory, both for our electric and gas customers, and we have an obligation to serve those customers in those service territories. So if you require service, we need to provide it to you and provide it. And I appreciate your analogy up front about turning those light switch on. We do it at over 99% reliability each and every year. And so we're pretty proud of that fact. And when you think about Montana and the weather we operate in, the terrain we operate in, we have more poles than customers. To be that reliable with that obligation to serve, we're very, very proud of that. And I appreciate you mentioning our team, over 1,200, 1,300 employees now in Montana, and they're all professionals. We're very, very proud to work with them each and every day.
And you have, you're delivering power, so you have infrastructure that allows for that to happen. You're generating power. Can you give us a sample of what those assets look like that help you deliver on the promise for power?
Yeah, I would say not only do we own generation assets, but we also contract with other power producers for our needs. And I would argue that, our portfolio we're actually, and people are always surprised about this, particularly when you read the papers, we're 60% carbon free in Montana. I'll round here a little bit in my math. I like to say we're a third hydro, a third wind and solar, and a third fossil fuel, and that's coal and natural gas primarily. Again, partially owned and contracted. So it's a great mix, and I think it's a very cost-effective mix and very reliable, too, and having both intermittent and dispatchable resources to serve our customers.
Brian, you are Northwestern Energy is a regulated utility in Montana, and we're not going to dive into the details of all that process, but what should that, as a consumer of power in Montana, why is that important to me? What does that mean to me that Northwestern Energy functions within the structure as a regulated utility?
Yeah, I think as a regulated utility, there's a commission there that is in place to make sure that we do provide our service in a reliable manner and an affordable manner. And I think you've heard me talk about this in the past, Steve. I think for $5 to $7 a day for our average customer to receive electricity and natural gas is a very, very good value. And it's one of the reasons utilities have been around, regulated utilities have been around for as long as they have, is because we provide an affordable and reliable product. And so that commission, we jointly, the commission and ourselves, have an obligation to serve customers, if you will. And so we have to work together to make good decisions to balance, you know, the financial health of the utility, but also to the benefit of customers from an affordable and reliable standpoint.
I like the way that you characterize that as a joint responsibility. Those commission hearings, I haven't been to a lot. I've read, and people have probably read news, and they can feel contentious, and there's different opinions on things. The bottom line is that the commission, the utility, have a responsibility to provide that resource to the end consumer in a responsible, affordable, reliable way. And Brian, you and I, working in the economic development sphere, that issue of affordability and reliability is number one. And so give us a sense of, you've talked about where your supply comes from, third hydro, third wind, third fossil fuel, either coal or natural gas. That is a good mix of portfolio. You're also buying some power as a part of that mix. Give us a little bit more detail on the reliability and affordability of that mix. And then I want to talk to you about, what investments are you making today to continue to grow that supply?
Yeah, I think one thing to keep in mind, I think certainly your listeners who've been around a long time remember when deregulation went in effect in the late 90s. And matter of fact, the Montana Power assets were sold in the late 90s. And starting on 1/1/26, January 1 of 2026 will be the first time that we will be resource adequate again in Montana since those assets were sold. And I think you recall that we couldn't own regulated generation yep. resources until 2008. And so we put the parts of Montana Power back together, grabbed some extra parts from some others here on 1/1/26, and we will be resource adequate for the first time in over 25 years. And that's important because as you know, I've talked about in the past, on the coldest days of the year, when the wind isn't blowing, the sun isn't shining, per se, we have to import power. And I remember back in January of 2024, when we imported over 50% yep. of our needs, we needed resources to help us. And so, you know, one thing we just invested in here, not more than a couple years ago, and have been building it over time, is right there in Laurel, near Billings, is the Yellowstone County plant, 175-megawatt plant. It's certainly there to help us on those coldest days, to be able to run full bore to serve customers. But also, because we have some intermittent resources, which are great, by the way, when the sun's shining and the wind's blowing, they're fantastic resources. But when they're not, we have the ability to run that plant to offset the intermittency. So it's a fantastic resource for us. But we're still even short with that 175 megawatts. So getting the first piece, incremental piece of Colstrip, the 222 megawatts from Avista here on 1126, actually filled out our portfolio from a resource adequate perspective. And so we're really, really pleased. We're going to feel a lot better going into this winter than we have in past years, having that incremental generation. And that's dispatchable generation. That's, in other words, when I need it, we can turn it on. And that's the nice thing about, you know, unfortunately, they're carbon intensive, but coal plants, when you need them, you can turn them on and run them.
Brian, I had on the bottom of my notes on this first page as we go through this first segment together, are you ready for winter? I'm asking myself right now, today's kind of this day where we're getting a little rain. It's not that cold, but it kind of wakes you up and, man, do I have everything I need because winter's coming and we live in Montana and it gets cold. Describe for us the scenario that took place that required you to go to the market and grab that power to meet our needs. Give us a little more detail. What happened? What took place?
Yeah, I was a week in, I think it was January 2024. We had wind earlier in the week and we were okay. And then temperatures got very, very cold, minus 40. And we had a four-day span there where we didn't have a lot of wind generation and we were short. And so we had to import power from the West. And if you think about dispatchable resources, they're likely to be fossil fuel resources. And so we were getting imports from the West on our transmission system, and over 50% of our need was imported. The thing, Steve, that I worry about the most, We were fortunate that week. Portland General had a lot of outages. They had a lot of lines down, so they couldn't even serve their customers. So they weren't taking any of that capacity. So we were able to get it. We were still paying $1,000 a megawatt hour versus typically $100 during the winter, $100 a megawatt hour. So we were paying a tremendous amount for that imported power. Unfortunately, our customers ended up paying for that. And so we certainly feel much, much better with incremental Colstrip. And I think Montana needs to be more energy independent as more fossil fuel resources are shut down. On that day, let's say in 1-1 of 26, if we didn't have this Colstrip, what if those resources weren't available? And that's the thing that scares us. Not as much as paying $1,000 a megawatt hour. That's scary in and of itself. But what if it's not available? And I think back to Texas, people were freezing to death when temperatures were in the teens, Steve. We don't freeze to death in the teens in Montana, but we will in minus 40.
Oh, we absolutely will.
And, you know, that's the thing that scares us the most. So this incremental capacity on 1126 is extremely important.
So is it that we've got to get through this winter and then we're going to be in a much stronger position in 2026, or at least get through the first half of the winter?
I feel better about this coming winter with Yellowstone County in and of itself.
Okay.
But to get us to full resource adequate, the incremental 222 megawatts of Colstrip gets us where we need to be. So, yes, I will feel much better on 1126.
Well, if you're sleeping well at night, then that means the rest of us are sleeping warm and well at night. Hey, when we come back, we're going to take a break here in just a second, Brian. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about the future, as we grow as a state, our economy's moving forward. We have emerging demands on our supply. Are we ready for that? And what are we doing to get prepared for that? And so when we come back after this break, we're going to dive in and talk a little bit about the future on Voices of Montana. Well, welcome back to Voices of Montana. I'm Steve Arviscal, your guest host today. And I have got an accomplished energy professional that has been leading energy supply, demand issues in Montana for decades, our CEO and president of Northwest Energy, Brian Bird. Brian, thank you again for joining us. That last break, there was a Northwestern Energy commercial on that last break. I'm not sure how that got timed out. Cody, did you have anything to do with that?
I think it's a great ad, and I think the commentary there is we have prices below the national average and have for ages. I think some time I've been here. I think one of the benefits we have is we run a low-cost utility, but we do have very, very good generation resources. Our hydro facilities, I think, are fantastic. They're my favorite resources. I have to say that out loud. I think they're the best renewables that you can have, and being able to acquire those and bring those back into the family, if you will, was a fantastic thing. And I think thinking about Colstrip, I mean, one thing we love about Colstrip is it's dispatchable and it's there, it's operating today, and we have great experience with it. But getting more of it for zero cost, Steve, we're going to get 592 megawatts. Actually, the 222 gets us resource adequate. We're getting another 370 from Puget, also at zero cost, upfront capital cost. And the reason we did that is we wanted to get full control of Colstrip. It gives us a 55% ownership. And so that's certainly helpful to us. We were concerned that the Western utilities, who had, you know, if you from a voting share perspective, certainly enough votes to shut down Colstrip.
That's right.
If you think about back to that January 2024 day, what if we didn't even have our existing 222 megawatts at Colstrip if the whole plant was shut down? So ability to get more of it at zero cost, and that 592 megawatts combined, the Vista piece and the Puget piece, is just round that to 600 for a second. And if you were to build a gas-fired plant today, it's around about $2,000 per kilowatt. And that's about a $1.2 billion investment at a minimum, probably closer to $1.5 billion. So to get resources, sure, they're not brand new, but they've been reliable, and we intend to maintain and make sure they're reliable on a going-forward basis. And yes, they have operating costs that we have to recover, but if you built a $1.2 to $1.5 billion plant, they also have operating costs. And so we think this is a fantastic opportunity to serve our customers when reliability and affordability are extremely important. And I think when we say those two things together, Steve, I think sometimes people like to separate them. But we should just focus on affordability. You can't. It's a balance. What we do is we say we balance reliability, affordability, and sustainability. I think we're doing great from the sustainability standpoint at 60% carbon free. But reliability and affordability are so paramount to what we do each and every day. It's critical that we balance that. And this ability to find incremental resources at zero upfront cost, it's not happening anywhere else in the United States. And so when I think about on a going forward basis, and I think before the break you mentioned, let's talk about the future, half your bills is your supply cost. And on a going forward basis, we're going to add almost 600 megawatts for zero upfront cost when others are going to have to pay over $1 billion to do that. That's substantial, and it's extremely going to be cost effective for us on a going forward. So I have great faith that on a going forward basis, our bills will continue to be below the national average. And I think as you watch national news about power prices, all electric utilities are raising their rates. Reason why, we're in a higher cost environment, and we all have to invest significantly more, not just to maintain our transmission and distribution businesses, but to replace and add incremental generation to our mix. So for us to do that as cost effectively, it's a fantastic outcome for our customers. I actually get grief about it at times that we make money by investing capital. You're not investing capital when you're getting 600 megawatts for zero. But I'll tell you what, the issue is at the end of the day, if we can provide an affordable product that's reliable, I think ultimately that benefits shareholders much more than you companies who are getting beat up substantially because of the affordability problem.
Yep. Excuse me for interrupting. You should feel good about that. And Brian, I've always appreciated when you came on as CEO, we had opportunity to interact in the economic development world, and you always were, let's get prepared. We want to shore up the supply that we have, the infrastructure that we have. We want it to operate and be reliable. We want it to be affordable. We want to be prepared for our energy future. I always appreciated that about you. My opening about turning that light switch off and then, you know, hoping for the best when you flip it back on. No one wants that hoping for the best kind of approach. You're being very strategic. You're making the investments, but you have to pay for that. It would be like us buying a new car. Cody goes out and buys a new car, and then he doesn't ever do any oil changes, and he doesn't operate and maintain it. He just, you know, till the wheels fall off. And you can't afford to do that in your position. So it is going to require some thoughtful operation and maintenance. And I know you're going to work that out with the PSC on exactly what that looks like and how much to be honest, how much we're going to have to pay. But we've avoided significant upfront capital costs. Now let's pay for reasonable operation and maintenance cut. That seems very thoughtful and strategic.
Yeah.
In that context, I want you to help me think about our future. We're a growing economy. There's new demands on our economy that are going to require new power. You have this load coming on that you're shoring up in January. Will that be adequate 5 years from now? Even will that be adequate 2 or 3 years from now, given the growth of Montana from an industry and business standpoint?
Yeah, one thing I've been talking about the Avista piece, adding for our 400,000 plus electric customers in Montana, and that is squared away for our existing customers. The Puget piece, it will be excess power, and we're hoping that helps us attract large load customers into Montana. But I think if data centers come, that won't be enough for them. And so what we're actually doing, we're talking about data centers to say, hey, we can't build the generation fast enough to serve you. You're going to have to build your own. And the reason I say that we can't build it fast enough, Steve, is we have to do what's called an IRP. We have to, you know, tell you what we think we're going to need for a going forward purpose. We need then to do an RFP. And that in and of itself, an RFP, a request for proposal of actually people to bid on projects in the state that we either would acquire or contract with, that process is kind of 2 to 4 years. And these data centers certainly want to move faster. So we essentially say, hey, we're happy to connect you to our T&D system. We have some excess capacity today from the Puget piece of Colstrip. But if you're going to want to connect to us, you're going to have to build your own generation. And then we'll connect you to the system because we just can't do it as fast as they want to. And I think there's concern about...
There is. I've heard it.
In general. And I think the concern is, and I think I can understand why people would be concerned about it, is they're taking up incremental capacity. Well, I call this the pitchfork effect, Steve. I mean, why would I make one customer happy and agitate 400,000 by hurting my existing customers for one data center? And so we need to, and we talked about this earlier in the call, jointly with the commission, protect customers. And so we want to serve large load customers. We believe we can serve large load customers and should for the state of Montana. But we need to, with these large load customers, go in, create a tariff, that is like the prices that they would have to pay and other rules, and get that approved by the Montana Commission. We're happy to do that. And we should do that to make sure collectively, we are protecting our existing customers. And when we talk to data centers, we tell them exactly that. That's what our expectation is, that we're going to protect our existing customers.
We're gonna take another little break here in about 30, 40 seconds. But I love the way you've described that, because I have heard a lot of comment around, wait a minute, we don't have the power for those data centers, and we'd love the tax base and there's some economic value there, but where's the power going to come from? So in partnership with the PSC, you know, you're going to create a framework that gives us as regular consumers, existing business, confidence that our needs will continue to be met. And they're not going to be, we're not going to be treated as second class customers to these large players that may come in into our community. We're going to talk. We got 10 seconds, Cody. I got more than 10 seconds, so I could. Yeah. I got 10 now. Okay, I'm burning up time here, but I want to dive more into your relationship with the PSC when we come back. The Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com.
Well, today you've got Steve Arviskow, your guest host, and I'm talking to Brian Bird, our president and CEO of Northwestern Energy. Brian, thank you for joining us again today and sharing some important information. We kind of skipped through this. We talked about the Yellowstone County Power Generation Facility, and the way that we described it, it sounded like, you know, that it, you know, it took you 25 minutes to conceptualize that and build it in 3 months, and here we go. It was a lot more that you had to do. I'd like you to describe the what went into that kind of investment, and it wasn't without some opposition, and I think it's fair to talk about where that came from, what it looked like, and how you worked through that.
Yeah, I think people forget that Yellowstone County is actually something from like the 2019 time period, even before that. For a minute, I mentioned the IRP, RFP process before. So for us to bid that project into our RFP and ultimately win, we had to build a gas pipe to get it to the location, and that certainly had challenge from an environmental perspective and other reasons, but the whole plant was difficult to build because of environmental reasons. The fact of the matter is it is a fantastic resource that I think is appropriately paired and complements renewables because of this ability to offset the intermittency of them. And of course, natural gas is cleaner than coal. So I think from our perspective, we feel good about it. But it was picked years ago, and it's taken years to actually plan and build. And we went, it was fraught with challenges, not just from a legal perspective, but COVID, and we had higher prices to deal with. And to get the plant done as timely as we did and for a price as low as we could, I think it's quite impressive feat. You talked about the quality of our people, for people to fight through those challenges, because we noted earlier in the call how important that a plant is to us in the winter. And so we wanted to get it done for the winter season a while back, and we got it done. And I think from my perspective, if people said, nope, we don't want that plant, I could turn around and sell that plant to data centers for much, much more than we cost to build it. And so we think it's a fantastic value for our customers, and we fought hard to get it done, with a lot of help, by the way, through others who understood the importance of the plant to serve customers in a reliable and affordable manner. So we feel quite pleased to have it up in operation and serving customers.
Well, that was an important effort. And, you know, I've heard some people say, well, they did that because of these big data centers coming to town. And that wasn't the goal. You're doing that to address the challenges that we have in our current supply when we're in winter months. Am I understanding that right?
Well, I'd have to say, we'd have been really, really smart to know that data centers would be a big thing at this point, way back in the 2019-2018 time period. Yellowstone County and the incremental coal strip, certainly the Avista piece, are there to serve our existing customers, period. And, you know, the fact is that's why they're being built. Do we have excess capacity to the Puget piece of coal strip? Absolutely. So we're able to serve some data centers? Sure. But like I said, on a going forward basis, I understand you had the CEO of Quantica on the other day. I'm sure he talked about the need to actually, for him to build some of his own generation. And I think other parties that want to build data centers, we're just not going to be able to accommodate in the speed that they wanted to build generation. So they're going to have to do some of that on their own. And back to Yellowstone County, I think people forget that we built that plant. We have the ability to get pre-approval. But if we would have waited for pre-approval, Steve, and thinking back to those cold winters when we didn't have that capacity, we felt it wasn't, we didn't have time. We had to build that plant. We took the risk of building a plant, $300 million plant, not knowing we were going to get approval. And why did we do that? Because we had to serve customers, and we thought it would be more reliable, more affordable to do it this way than buying off the market. And so that was a big risk this company took for our customers.
Brian, talk to me about your interaction with the PSC related to that project. Because am I recalling correctly, within the last couple of months, you've been in discussions, hearings even, on the issue of rate adjustments based on that investment or maybe other investments. Educate me a little bit on your more recent hearings with the PSC.
Yeah, I think, you know, the PSC, they obviously hear from us and they hear from interveners who have different points of view and different thoughts. I think, you know, there's some thoughts that the cost for the plant is too much. As I pointed out, I will tell you that we could sell that for more than we built it today.
Yep.
And in light of what it cost with COVID and everything else, I think it's a fantastic bargain for customers. But they need to hear both sides, and they have to ultimately make a decision based upon that. And I think, you know, we know what it would cost to build it today. And I think some of the issue is, well, you should have picked other resources. Well, the other resources didn't have transmission pathway to Montana. So, in essence, we think this is a fantastic outcome for customers, and we hope that the commission sees it that way as well.
What describe, I don't want to get you into awkward territory here, Brian, but describe this working relationship with the PSC. Earlier you described it as a partnership, and I think knowing you and how you work, you very much consider that. They have a responsibility in statute on what they're responsible for. You have a responsibility as a regulated utility. What's that relationship look like? I'm not going to ask you what you'd like to change or improve, but describe that working relationship.
Yeah, partnership might be a little strong. I would say we each have a responsibility to serve customers, right? And I think, you know, they have a job to do, and I think there's always been a focus on affordability. But I think the thing to keep in mind is it's very difficult to talk about affordability and reliability. You can't really decouple those two things. And so I'd say back, it's almost easier sometimes to lean more towards the customer because elected officials than to think about the balance of financial health for the utility. I can understand how that could happen.
Yeah.
But even more importantly is understanding the balance between reliability and affordability. And if, in essence, if from a poor financial outcomes does not provide the proper incentive for investment to maintain our system. And we certainly are doing everything we can to deal with affordability, but we also have to invest to maintain reliability. And the compact is you make an investment, you're able to earn or have the ability to earn an authorized rate of return. We are certainly not anywhere near our authorized rate of return today in Montana. So I think that's just something that we need to continue to impress upon the commission, the importance of the financial health of the utility at the same time, as they should, balance the reliability and affordability for customers.
Absolutely. Well, there's a big topic on the table that we haven't talked about yet, and we've got a break coming up, so we'll just be able to tease this out. But there's a proposed, I don't know how to describe it, merger sale partnership with Black Hills Corporation and Northwestern Energy. We help us understand a little bit more about what that means. What is it going to mean for service in Montana? What will that future structure look like? What's the process between today and when a final decision is made? How does that process work? So just touch on the 30,000 foot view, and then when we come back from the break, we'll have some detail.
Yeah, I think from 30,000 foot view, we're a relatively small utility, and maybe in Montana we seem big, but out of the electric utilities in the Edison Institute, or Electric Institute, there's like 40. We're like number 37, so we're very small. Black Hills is right there with us. They're slightly bigger than we are. And so scale is extremely important today in terms of being able to negotiate better prices from vendors, to have better financial wherewithal, better pricing on our debt and equity. And so we're just seeing the value of scale, and we've been talking to Black Hills and other neighbors for the whole time I've been here, and we always have these conversations. Everyone wants to try to get a bit bigger, but as we sit here today, scale is extremely important, kind of ever since post-COVID, and we really felt the time was right to make this happen. Now, back to 30,000 feet, we need approvals. We need approvals in three states for sure, Montana, South Dakota, and Nebraska. That's where the states that we overlap. And so that probably is a 12-month time period plus, potentially, Steve. But we believe this is going to be a good thing, not just for shareholders, obviously being a bigger corporation, it helps them in terms of liquidity, if you will, in the stock. But from a customer perspective, ultimately, you don't need two CEOs, you don't need two boards, you don't need a lot of duplicate costs. Now, those costs ultimately accrue to our customers through future rate reviews. In essence, if our costs were going to go up 5% with a merger, maybe they're only going up 3-4%, and that benefits customers longer term. And those numbers are picked out of the air. There's no aspects in terms of what our plans are. But just to give you an idea, it's going to tamper down future rate increases because of cost savings of putting these two companies together. When I say that, I also have to mention people are a little worried about it. What about the service to Montana?
Yeah, exactly. Let's pause on that for just a second.
Yeah, great.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, you're going to get to speak to service to Montana in the midst of this merger proposal. Well, we have had a very fast conversation, a lot of content. We've been talking to Brian Bird, President and CEO of Northwestern Energy. Thank you again, Brian. We were in the middle of a hot issue for discussion in Montana, the proposed merger. Give us some sense of how this will impact the customer in Montana. Is life going to change for us? Will things look different? What could that be?
No, I had somebody ask about that, and you know, I said it's not like Black Hills is going to roll up here with a bunch of new linemen or gas employees to take their jobs. Our, you know, closer you are to customers, you certainly have great job guarantees. We certainly need people to serve our customers. Matter of fact, I'd argue both of our companies, because we're relatively small, we don't have enough people in certain areas to do a good enough job that we should be doing. So I think combining our company will give us more people to solve problems and take care of opportunities that are in front of us. And so I think the issue is the overlap we have is we have one community, Kearney, Nebraska, that we actually both serve. Otherwise, as I pointed out earlier, we have service territories to cover. And so I think it's going to have very, very little impact to our customers. Matter of fact, each of us are going to be doing business as our original company. We're going to have a new company at what's called the holding company, the company that owns all of these businesses. But our customers we're going to be doing business as Northwestern Energy. So the truck's going to show up. It's going to look exactly the same. Folks are going to be exactly the same. But there will be savings, as I talked about. Ultimately, that'll be passed on to customers. Think about the ability of large utilities to negotiate better pricing than a smaller utility. And we'll gain some scale, have some more leverage for those types of things, and we'll be able to reduce some costs. We'll also have best practices we can share. Black Hills is better at some things than we are. We're better than them at some things. I'll pick on wildfire. We've got, you know, being in Montana, we have a bit more experience than they have, but they have risks there as well. And sharing these best practices are going to make this combined entity better than we would be on a standalone basis. And so extremely important. I think even from an employee perspective, I think long-term, we'd like to see this company grow. We'd like to see Montana grow. And I think there's actually could be an opportunity. We'd see more employees longer-term in Montana. So we're excited about it. We think it's the right thing. I think if this company, Northwestern Energy, wouldn't have bought Montana Power's transmission distribution assets back in the early 2000s, we'd be irrelevant. Had we not bought the hydros, we'd be irrelevant today. It's important that we have more size to do what we need to do for our customers long term.
Brian, quickly, we got about 30 seconds. How can a customer of Northwestern Energy participate in the decision making process? Will there be a hearing? Can they send letters? Give our audience a sense of, hey, if you've got something to say about this topic, we know it's important to you. How do they do that?
They can certainly send letters to the Montana Public Service Commission. There's an opportunity also for public comment. And so there are means to weigh in your thoughts on not only the merger, but anything, any business that we have in front of the MPSC.
Well, Brian, we've just really appreciated all the content and information you shared. Anything we've left off the table that you just want to share quickly?
Well, real quickly, you started with flicking the light switch. I tell a story where someone, my neighbor came by to borrow my Apple charger, and then he went and plugged his phone and the charger into my electricity. And I said, aren't you going to ask to borrow my electricity? And he says, well, I didn't even think about that. And I'm like, that's how most people are with the service we provide. It's so important. You have to have it every day, but you don't even think about it when you use it. So it's very much in line with your flicking the switch. We're proud of that fact to be as reliable as we are that people don't think about it. But I hope people, when they do think about it, when they get their bill, they understand how important that reliability is each and every day for the service that we provide.
Thanks, Brian. Really appreciate you joining us. Brian Bird, Northwestern Energy on Voices of Montana. Thank you for being a part of our show today.
You've been listening to Voices of Montana. Comments and opinions heard are those of the host or callers and not necessarily those of this station, sponsors, or Northern News Network. Join us Monday through Friday at 9:06 for Voices of Montana.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.